I'm here with Congressman Jeff Fortenberry from Nebraska. Congressman, last week the GOP conference invited the president to your conference in Baltimore, and he showed up, and there was an exchange on television that seemed to benefit everyone, an open exchange of ideas. You approached the president afterward and had some words with him. You got to talk to him a little bit. Was that for the cameras? How did that turn out? Is bipartisanship back in Congress, or is that just sort of a brief dream and now we're on to business as usual around here? What do you think?
Well, the process is broken. It's fragmented. Everyone recognizes that, and so the way out of that is unclear. But the problem here is we need civility. We do need bipartisanship. There's been some things that we've been able to work on together, but there are some clear philosophical differences as well. So you can't sacrifice principles for the sake of bipartisanship, and that's one of the problems. If someone says, you're not voting for my bill, therefore you're not bipartisan, that's not the right way to frame the issue. I'm going to vote against something I don't believe in. It doesn't mean we can't look for opportunities to work together. But I have an obligation, first of all, to my conscience and judgment as to what I believe to be right for the country. And if that conflicts with bipartisanship, that issue transcends the need to get along, if you understand. But with that said, I think that we've got to find a better way. This is the admonition of the president, and I agree with him, to clear the way so that the areas of common ground can be worked and massaged so that we can get some things done that are reasonable. I think you've got some pathways perhaps on energy policy that could be areas where we could work on. The country needs a bold new sustainable energy vision. The president kind of laid that out recently in the State of Union. I think there's a lot of agreement there. Healthcare, there's agreement on the need for reform, but the right type of reform. So how do you start untangling the philosophical differences? That's unclear, the pathway ahead on that, but when people start accusing one another of not being for providing health care for people, that's wrong. It doesn't lend itself to the spirit of bipartisanship.
Meanwhile, Mr. Boehner just today accused Speaker Pelosi and Leader Reid of plotting and scheming, his words, to pass health care. That's not a very charitable statement.
No, but on the flip side, when you're working behind closed doors and when you said we need transparency, when the president said we'll have it all out in the open on cameras, and that didn't happen, it creates a lot of mistrust among the American people and my side of the aisle as well. So, look, on health care, there's a need for health care reform, the right kind of reform that will reduce costs and improve health care outcomes while we protect vulnerable persons. There's a lot of good ideas out there to do that. I didn't consider the package that was put together, a lot of it in the 11th hour behind the closed doors, to meet that criteria. But there's a lot of things that could be done that you maybe would get 80% support on. So hopefully the meeting with the president, with Republicans, the demand from the American people to be more transparent, to try to find areas of common ground without sacrificing principle, will lead to a different spirit. But, it's just a lot of pushing and shoving and divisiveness.
You don't sound very hopeful right now.
I'm not seeing any indication of the reality of it, frankly.
From your side as well, though? From both sides right now?
There's just a deep divide. There's just a deep divide. I don't know what will heal that in an instant.
Is it just a deep divide politically and ideologically? It seems to me the personal divide is wider than it once was, even in my time here, that members desire to really sit down, even if they have philosophical differences, is not what it was.
Interesting observation on your point. I think because there's a climate in which that's simply dangerous, politically dangerous, to appear as though you're looking toward to benefit maybe someone else politically by engaging with them, and that's sad.
Look, the president said as much the other day when he was talking to the Democrats. He said basically that the environment is so poisoned now that any Republican that gets next to me is putting themselves at risk.
Yeah. He, in effect, said that this morning at the National Prayer Breakfast as well. So what's the solution for that?
Is he right?
There's a lot of personal relationships around here, in spite of what you see on the television and the pushing and shoving. And I think, look, most Americans, when they have a problem with someone, they either try to work it out or avoid them. And here it's just the opposite. You don't work it out and you don't avoid them. And so it's unnatural in a certain sense. So people pick up on that intuitively. I think they want a system that works. But again, they want people here who stand for their principles as well and not are looking at simply bipartisanship for the sake of bipartisanship, but who can actually get things done that are grounded in truth and built on justice for the betterment of the country. There's a real divide over that core kind of concept here, and that's, if you want to say that's poisoning things, perhaps it is.
Well, you sound like one lawmaker who's legitimately torn between the desire for comity and getting along better, but also the broad divide between yourself and, let's say, the Democratic leadership or the president. You sound like you'd like to get along better, but you're not really willing to get along for the sake of getting along.
I think that's a fair comment. Now, yesterday, I'll tell you, I sat down with a friend of mine from the other side of the aisle, and it's a resolution, and he asked me to co-sponsor. There were some concerns. We talked about it. I said, all right, I'll do it, but I have to read it first. I read it. I didn't like one phrase. I said, take that out, change it to this. He said, deal. So we'll get it going. Now, it's a non-consequential resolution, but that's an example of what goes on behind the scenes that people don't see. On the consequential measures, it's much harder because sides are dug in, there's political stakes around it. When you have the legislative branch, in effect, leading on something like health care versus the executive branch, which didn't lay down a plan, you're going to get the messy business of democracy crafting a bill that is very compromised in many ways. And so I think that's part of it. But I think...
What about the politics of the nation right now? You look at the politics of the nation and angry... We describe them as angry independents, Tea Party voters of whatever stripe, the results in Massachusetts. To the extent that voters are angry at Washington, angry at the system, I see a lot of people here trying to capture and benefit from the anger, not trying to stop it. Do you agree with that?
Well, no. I mean, nobody wants to exist in an angry environment. Again, it's unnatural. I think that what has happened, we are representatives of the people. You lay down your vision. You lay down your background. You give a little bit of insight into your character and who you are for people to make a judgment as to whether or not they want to send you to Washington to represent them. And so what has happened, though, in the country is there's a large number of people who have felt like Washington is arrogant, Washington is not listening, Washington is not transparent, Washington is spending too much, Washington is creating policies that are Washington-centric and not family and community-centric.
If I were a Republican running to try to unseat a Democrat, let's say, mm-hmm. I would do my very best to stoke and highlight the anger over all those things you just listed, because it would help get that bum out and would help get me in. That's what I would do.
Well, again, you have to meet people where they are and first of all, build a relationship. And a lot of people who feel like they have no relationship, either with their representative or Washington in general, are understandably angry. And they've shown up here in the hundreds of thousands and, of course, perhaps in the millions around the country. You know, I've had tough town halls, too, where you need to lay out clearly what you're thinking and take all of the hard questions. But it's in that very act of representative democracy, being a republic, that I think helps bring about a process which is more normalized than what we've seen before. In a certain sense, this is healthy because it's providing an outlet for representative democracy to actually be engaged again, because I think fundamentally there's a lot of rejection of Washington arrogance going on, and that's what a lot of the agitation is about, and it's very understandable, and it needs to be engaged.
For the foreseeable future, maybe until after 2010, maybe till after 2012, I don't know, I'm speculating. Are we, should we accept the current condition of a deeply polarized Congress, not only in terms of the politics, but maybe in terms of a lot of the relationships and the rhetoric? Is that just the way it's going to be for a while, do you think?
Well, you're an observer of this situation, and you don't see a way out of that at the moment. There could be something that happens that unites us all, something, an idea that breaks through.
Or a tragedy, maybe.
You'd hate to think it would be a tragedy. But you've seen that a lot of times in American history. But you'd like to think it would be around a vision that makes sense for the betterment of the country, that is worked out in a transparent way, in a democratic way, through the process, the normal process that we're supposed to have up here, where you have committee hearings, you have testimony, you allow for amendments, you allow for debate, and you allow for some compromises. But again, not asking people to join you in the name of bipartisanship when it compromises their principle. That's not bipartisanship. That's not good governance. And this is a messy business. And it's always been that way. Now, what you're saying, I think, is true. There's a a spirit here right now where it seems to be intractable, the two sides finding a way out to work on issues that are essential to the well-being of the country. So we'll have to see.
Seems like a lot of what's going on now with all of the reaching out, because the public is so fed up, the Republicans reached out to the president in turn has reached out and has come and visited you. He'll visit the Senate Republicans before long, I'm sure, just to spread the love. To the observer, it all seems like a continuing...
drama? Play?
Gambit. It seems like a continuing gambit because everyone feels like this is what they have to do, but I'm not sure anybody means it.
Well, let me tell you, there's a lot of reaching out going on after the Massachusetts election, if you've noticed that, because the people spoke clearly. They rejected Washington arrogance. They elected a man who said he's going to be more independent. They elected someone who, as he said it very well, this is not the Kennedy seat, it's not a Democrat seat, it's the people's seat. And that changed the whole game up here, at least in the health care debate. And so you've seen very quickly how the leadership here has pulled back on what they had structured and were forcing in, through the Congress in regards to the health care bill.
They don't have the votes anymore.
They don't have the votes anymore. So look, you know, sometimes a little change of power structure can actually create a new environment for more cooperation.
So warning shot across the bow, in other
Definitely.
Words.
Definitely.
Well, you mentioned Senator-elect Brown. He's going to be sworn in about 30 minutes over on the other side, so that's happening right now.
Well, he ran a great race. You know, I had heard about it but didn't follow it until mid-December, and then I started to hear about this person. And when he said, look, this is not the Ted Kennedy seat, it's not the Democrat seat, it's the people's seat, that impressed me. And I began to pay attention. A lot of other people did. There's two good lessons from that race. Don't make fun of the hometown stadium, number one, and don't make fun of somebody's truck.
my last question for you, Mr. Fortenberry, what has your leadership said to you in conference about the reaching out that's going on? Are there, I don't want to call them marching orders, but have they made it clear that they're not terribly interested as a strategy to having a whole lot of bridging the divide right now? Because frankly, Republicans are polling pretty well, and whatever's going on is working to Republicans' favor. That's clear. Have they said don't mess with success, or have they said they're fine with it, or have they said nothing? What have they said?
Look, I think deep down, the dynamics of the place here are peculiar. It is an institution that has right now a particularly harsh fragmentation. But I think deep down, most members here on both sides want to work hard and try to do what's right according to the dictates of their own conscience. Now, with that said, you cannot violate your own conscience or principles in seeking to reach out. You have to stand for them firmly. And if there can be common ground that's found between people who come from perhaps disparate backgrounds, excellent. If there can't, you take your vote and then you move on. But it is, there is a heightened politicalization going on, because of the way in which the media, the new forms of media that are out there, how quick our election cycles now, the amount of money that's poured into them, all of these factors have been heightened the intensity of debate and our new dynamics in terms of this question about bipartisanship.
When was the last time you spent a weekend in Washington and socialized with colleagues instead of going back to Nebraska?
Well, I have five children, so I usually head back pretty quickly. And this, frankly, is a regret that my predecessor, who served here for 25 years, told me about. He said it was not uncommon for members to get together over the weekend for dinner, different members on different sides of the aisle. It's pretty rare when I do that, frankly. I've enjoyed it when I've been able to do it, and there's nothing like sharing a meal to find the common bond that you have of humanity in general as Americans, and to think about creative ways to work together and also to mitigate damage, personal damage, when you do have a difference so that there is a respect of the differences. You raise a good point. Washington has changed in that regard. People are in and out very rapidly because they have to get home. They have to defend themselves politically. They have to respond to the media. And there's increasing demands on the time of the congressman, and there's very little opportunity to do that type of social engagement that I think would strengthen relationships.
With that in mind, can I ask you, do you have any Democratic friends? And I don't mean your friend across the aisle. Yeah. I mean friends, a friend, somebody you would trust, a social friend, somebody who, if you weren't a congressman, that you would really call a friend. Do you have any on the Democratic side?
Elected officials up here?
Yes.
Of course.
You do?
Absolutely.
Because so many people say that you all aren't friends the way you used to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't speak for what was the past, but I know that, again, the intensity of the dynamics here create an environment in which it's very difficult to have the time to do that, in which there is, it creates an element of mistrust politically. But I'm just telling you, behind the scenes, people talk, they talk generously with one another. I'll just give an example. And I had a surgery, heart surgery on my daughter several times in Boston. I told one of the members of the delegation who went to great lengths to make sure that my transition into that community was taken care of, or at least availed himself. And that's an example. And we have a very distinct divide philosophically on a lot of issues. But the care for my little girl transcended all of that, and he was willing and wanted to do what he could. So,
Congressman Frank, it sounds like it.
No, it was another congressman, but I won't name him. But still, and that's meaningful to me. And this type of thing goes on, and it's not seen in the public, and it is helpful toward the ends that you're talking about. But again, the dynamics here right now, the fragmentation, the politics of it, are so intense and divisive that it's not creating an atmosphere in general that's conducive to those ends.
Congressman, thank you.